Welcome back to the Frontend Coffee Break. This is episode 27. My name is Ricard Torres, and with me, Chucho Castañeda. How are you today?
Hello, Ricard. I see that you're going on your slow version so that people, when they're listening it at 1.5, can still understand it well.
Exactly, exactly. We know Spaniards have this way of talking that is not slow. So I'm trying my best for you guys. Alrighty. So yes, we work at Cognizant Accentric and we're both front-end engineers. And today we want to talk about leadership, but not the kind of leadership about presidents or congresses or whatever, talking about more in the roles of front-end, right? You know, in any organization, they have different names. We have front-end managers, front-end leads, staff managers, technical leads, technology leads. It's just, I think in the end, everything is the same thing. But I want to ask you, Chucho, when you think about front-end lead, what do you think about?
Well, interesting enough, when you're working as a developer, usually, and you start growing up in the company, you get to a point in which they tell you, okay, the next step is to actually become a manager, a project manager, and this kind of things, which sort of, it's like a lead position. But this is not exactly what we're discussing right now. I see a person like when they evolve to a project manager, that they just manage the project itself and maybe manage people and this kind of things. But when I think of a front-end lead, someone that doesn't go that way, that to that position to manage the project, but still stays in a development role, or at least that still stays close to the development process, and that it has the accountability of taking the technical decisions and also guiding the team in forward into success. I would say that that's my definition of a front-end lead. How about you?
Yeah, I think you said the perfect word is technical, right? I mean, the difference between, for me, like project manager or front-end manager, front-end lead, for me is not looking at the spreadsheets in Jira, but more like guiding, as you said, technical decisions, architecture, high-level picture of a project, but not in terms of account like money or billables or things like that, but more like you are like the buffer between project managers and the development team. You are there to guide them, to help them, to unblock them, and just, you know, to be there for them, right?
And also, as we said, it's you are leading the tech lead, and in many cases, a lot of the decisions of how to maybe organize the code of the project, maybe which technology tech stack should be used, it falls down on the front end lead as well. You may or may not have an architect, which they have a lot of saying regarding this kind of things, but even if you do, I think that the front-end lead does have a role deciding on these kind of things, you know?
Well, that's a totally different, like, I think, conversation if we're talking about front-end architect versus regular, let's say, full-stack architect where they know about, you know, the whole stack end-to-end. But I feel you. I hear you. I think definitely our front-end lead, our understanding of front-end lead, you got to know a little bit of architecture and you got to know how APIs work, what you are connecting to, not only, you know, writing JavaScript, HTML, and CSS, but actually, you know, going a little bit, for me, it's more high level, right? I mean, the developers on your team will go low level, like they will care about flex and grid columns and things like that, be low level, right? But you don't have to care about that. You got to go higher and you got to care about, okay, as you said, the code, how is the code organized? Is it performant? Is it scalable? Will it work with the design system? Do we use any, I don't know, atomic design, whatever it is, right? So definitely don't, for me, it's not going too low on implementation.
But also making sure that the I guess, implementing or designing the best practices that the team will do. You know, you're the one that, as a lead, you're also the one that decides, for example, if you're going to have quality gates or not, what type of reviews or the way that you're going to review the code and this kind of thing as well. There's a lot of things that the front-end lead takes into his hands and...
I think sometimes when things go right, it's like system operations or DevOps. Like if everything goes right, nobody notices them. Yeah. When everything goes wrong, everybody goes, "Oh, what's happening?" So here's the same thing. If the team is very like well greased and it's moving along, there are no blockers. People like care to each other. Great communication. It's like, okay, what is this guy doing here with this person? What, I don't know. They just there in some meetings and they do some estimations, but what else, right? And I think there's so much more that goes maybe unnoticed sometimes, right? And this bad decision or how you try to, for me, it's like enabling the team, right? Empowering them to do stuff and trying to, but let's hold on, not so fast. I know you have lots of thoughts about types of leaders. I have one question before we jump into that. Would you say a front-end lead is a boss? The boss of the team? She's my boss?
I think that being a leader and being a boss, although they have things that are similar or they have overlapping things, they're not the same thing. And definitely I think that a front-end lead should not be considered as a boss. I don't think I've, at least in the last years that I, in the many years that we've that I've worked at Cognizant and Centric, I have never seen the front-end leads that I worked with as a boss, and I don't see myself now that I do that role as a boss of anyone. I'm not the kind of person that, I don't expect the front-end lead to be the one that tell you should do this, and like, this is what you need to do, but in a bossful way. Let's say that that they are the ones that decide what you need to do. And I don't expect to be, and I try not to be that kind of person that says, hey, you have to do this. I think that the front-end lead should be someone that suggests or that guides, as you say. And that's the big difference between a boss. You should never feel obligated to do what the front-end lead tells you to do. And you as a front-end lead should not expect people to do, because they're obligated to do it, the things that you ask them to do. I think that you're the one that organizes, that maybe says, okay, you see things in the higher level, and then you say, this is what should be, what we should focus. I would suggest you to do for you to do this kind of task. In the end, they are the ones that decide if they want to do it or not. They know their accountabilities. But definitely, although they might seem the same thing, I don't think that a front-end lead or a lead is the same thing as a boss.
Yeah, I think for some of the listeners, maybe this is like, what are you talking about? Of course, the front-end lead or the front-end manager is my boss, and they probably like decide to have my promotions or my raises. But inside our organization, Cognizant-centric, it's way different. I mean, we have this flat organization where, you know, there are no bosses, and there's not a pyramid. So for us, I think it's very like easy or natural to come to that conclusion. But maybe for other companies, at least from my side, I've been in other companies and it has been like that, where your lead is your boss and you do as you're told, and they're responsible for promoting you or advancing you in your career. And that's way different here. So bravo. Well, I'm with you, of course. I'm here at Cognizant-centric. So yes, no bosses. That's fantastic. And no micromanagement. That's also great. Okay, so talking about type of leadership or type of front-end leads manager, whatever it is, you know, what type of leaderships are out there, Chucho?
Well, there's several leadership types that you can find, and it applies to front-end lead or any other type of leadership. I have a list here so that I don't forget them. Let's go through them and then discuss a little bit on what type of boss of leader we are. Yes, the subliminal. No, what type of leader we are. So there's, for example, the autocratic leader or autocratic leadership, which basically makes decisions without consulting anyone. It's just whatever they want. They are the authority and they say, this is what we need to do and this is how it's going to be done. Then we have the other way around, which is the democratic leadership, which they take into account or they involve the entire team into the decision making, and everyone has a weight inside the team. Then you have the transformational leadership, which basically just the idea is that they inspire the team through effective communication and create a sense of belonging and purpose. The transactional leadership, which it's based on rewards and penalties. If you do this, you'll be rewarded. If you don't do this or you do that, you're going to be penalized. You have the laissez-faire leadership, which basically gives a lot of freedom to the rest of the team members. They expect people to know what they need to do. The servant leadership, which prioritizes the need of their team above their own. The situational leadership, which basically just adjusts the approach based on the situation in which they are. They could be autocratic at one things, democratic at another, in others. And finally, the coaching leadership, which would focus on the personal development of their teams and works more like a mentor or a coach. Now, I'm sure that there's many other ways that you can describe or other types of leaderships, but these are some of the most, these are ones that I know most, the common ones.
That is a lot. And I think some of them overlap, right? I think
yes,
you could be like a leader who listens to the team, right? But then at some point, sure, you can maybe take decisions because when there's like 50-50, what do? Two persons of the team says, go that route, and then others go that route. So in the end, you gotta cut the cake, as they say in Spanish.
Cut the cake.
Or something like that. As well as you know, coaching and mentoring, I think also there's room in any of these type of leaders to have a way of coaching and mentoring. So definitely, I see myself in some of them, right? Yeah. Not only in one, I see myself in prioritizing the team, like their needs and their career, because I'm already on a position where I'm already high enough that I can help them grow. Also, I see coaching here. I see democratic, and sometimes I see autocratic in terms of like, if you don't know how to do it, I'll just say how it's done. So how about you, Joe? Where are you?
Take into account that this kind of leadership, that doesn't, it's not always not black or white. We are in shades of gray or rainbow colors when we're talking about this. You have aspects a little bit of one or the other. And I guess that these leadership types refer to what is the main aspect of your leadership, right? You know, mm-hmm. I know the type of leader that I like to be, and that is the laissez-faire approach. I love it. That's the one that I work best with. When I've been led, I'd rather have the people that I work with that lead the team to be laissez-faire. I like them to just know that I know exactly what I need to do, and they give me a total freedom of doing it on my time, knowing that I will deliver and that I will hit the deadline. And that's the type of leadership that I like. I do as the same as you. Sometimes I need to, there's a decision that needs to be taken. I try to take the input of everyone regarding these decisions. Sometimes, as you say, it's like A or B, and you say, well, it's going to be A. Why? Because I think that's the best approach without even consulting the rest of the team. But for me, the type of leadership that I like to enforce is the laissez-faire. And the way that I go about this is that at the beginning, when I start working with a team, I try to give as much of my time as possible to help them out, to help them, to empower them, to give them all the tools that they need in order to work. But then after that, it's like, the more I give them all the freedom that they need, I give them all the power of the decision to decide when and what they're going to be working on. Of course, I do. That doesn't mean that we begin the sprint. I say, okay, you have your work. Bye.
Bye. I'm going to the beach. Yeah.
But it does mean that I expect everyone to be autonomous enough to know what they need to do, and I'm going to be there if they need some help. But I'd rather everyone be free to do their work without any pressure.
You see, so I think this one probably is like the best one for me as well, for like as a leader, because you didn't have to be like, of course, micromanagement or just tell them what to do at the tech zone. But I wonder, how does that work with junior profiles? Because junior profiles usually, of course, they don't have the technical know-how. They don't have maybe the soft skills and all the skills required to deliver a requirement or a product end to end, right, from the beginning to the end. So I wonder, how do you approach this type of leadership when you have junior profiles in your team?
Well, basically just by looking over the fence from time to time, you know.
Okay.
You let them, you put them, leave them in the playground, like go ahead, play, but then from time to time just look and see what they're doing. And I think that this is an approach that of course, depending on the level, that the grade that the people that you're working with, they have, they will need more or less attention. With people with, as you say, with less experience, it's more important to be on the lookout for their needs. And from time to time, don't say, hey, when are you expecting to deliver this? But more saying, hey, so you're working, what are you working on? Oh, you're working on this. How are you doing? Do you need any help? You know, just try to see how they are. And based on that, seeing, okay, I think you're taking too much time on this. Maybe you, and then give a little bit of advice on that. Not telling them exactly what to do, but you do need to take to be on the lookout on the work that they're doing.
Right. So I think in this case, I mean, I like to foster the idea that it's more of a like push than pull. I mean, I don't want to have to pull information from people. I want them to volunteer that on the daily stand-ups or alignment meetings where they kind of tell me, okay, what I'm working on. This is blocking me. This is not blocking me. Rather than me trying to fish the information, right? Because sure, I am with you that asking them, how long is it going to take? Do you have it for by tomorrow? That's micromanagement. I don't like that. But also, like, I expect them, or I want to explain to them, please just, you know, raise your hand. Like, if you're blocked 2 hours, you got to raise your hand. If you don't know how to continue, you raise your hand. And eventually, you will raise your hand less and less, right?
Yes.
But definitely, more push towards up rather than up pulling from, yeah.
I like this approach that you're doing. And this is by basically empowering the your team members and fostering a good practices regarding on communication, good practices regarding on how to proceed and different approaches. When I started working in IT development-wise, you know, because at first I was more on a teaching role, but the moment that I started working more on that development role, one of the things that the company that I was working in, they taught us, and I think it's very important, was basically that communication is key. That you have to communicate what's happening. And this includes, for example, if you're not going to make it to a meeting, you have to be proactive and communicate, hey, you know, I am not going to make it to that meeting. Don't wait for me. Don't wait for the last moment when the meeting is about to start and say, hey, I'm not going to be there. No. Try to be proactive regarding this. And also, and this is something that I love the way that they fostered it. They basically, by continuously saying it and showing that you can do this, is they said that it's more important to not hide mistakes. You know, if you find something that you made a mistake, for you to communicate it as soon as you can, because it's going to be worse if the client, for example, finds that mistake and says, hey, what's happening here? It's better if you say, hey, you know, this happened. I broke this without knowing, or this situation happened, so that your team can take proactively a decision. But that was...
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to hide your mistakes or, like, you know, go to the Git blame and see that line, oh, that was me. I mean, I think it's fine, and I do it all the time. When I break something, I just say, hey, I broke this thing, then I'll fix it. Right? I mean, I own the mistake, I own the implementation, and I'll just go ahead and fix it, and that's it. And nobody's going to get fired. It's going to get, you know, thrown out the window. And I think it's fine. And if you as a leader, you, like, lead with example, I guess the others will follow you, right? And for me, it's not super easy to, like, make the juniors comfortable speaking and, like, being around. When you talk about democratic leaders, or, you know, have these stand-ups where you have senior managers, whatever, and then you have juniors. But just try to say, it's fine. Everybody's fine. I mean, if you're the first to admit a mistake, maybe they feel more comfortable doing it. I don't know. It's also the hard part, like helping the juniors speak up. Not easy.
Yeah. And it also depends on the type of person they are, in the sense that a lot of people are very shy, especially in IT. I've found that there's a lot of people that say, hey, you know, I don't like to talk in public. It's like, well, sometimes depending on what you're doing, you would need to talk in public, and you need to find a way to encourage this behavior, to encourage them to speak up a little bit more.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not like going to a conference and speaking in front of 1,200 audience, but more in a small round, maybe a client, maybe some stakeholders. You're going to be able, I think, as a developer, if you're in this IT career, at some point you'll have to defend your work, say, just update on the progress and say, hey, or maybe just, you know, own the whole thing. When you're a lead, you're the first one that they're going to blame. Say, okay, this is not working. Yeah, right? I mean, you will never blame the junior or the ones under you. I mean, you are the maximum responsible, and you are the top person, top doc to give face. So it's fine. You just learn how to say, yeah, that's not done. That's on our side. We'll fix it.
I think that you've just said something that is very important. As a lead, you are the responsible in a sense of what the team does, or at least you're the point of entry. And you mentioned it at the beginning of the podcast that you're the communication point between the project manager and the team. And this is very important, that you are the one that represents the team. And if there's a mistake, it's a mistake of the team. It's a team's mistake. You don't say, oh, no, little Johnny did this mistake. He is terrible. It's like,
come
on.
He broke the side.
Oh, yeah, I hate his work. No, you just say, it's like, oh, sorry, we as a team, we screwed up. And we're going to fix it. And I think it's very important that the people that you work with feel protected, and they don't feel that you're going to throw them under the bus. You know, it's like, oh, this is not working. Oh, It's him. It was him.
Definitely. I had one question that somebody asked me not so long ago. How do you delegate? Like, if you're the lead, the front end lead, and then, of course, when a difficult implementation comes in, right, and you know this is going to be maybe a tight deadline or it's very complex integration of systems, how do you, like, overcome the feeling that says, okay, I got to do it myself. I'll just code it myself. I'll spend one day maybe, right, and I'll deliver it, and it's going to be, you know, at my expectation of excellence. How do you say, no, let me delegate that to the either junior or senior profiles, whatever it is, to another team member? Right? How do you do that?
I think there's two things here. One of them is you have to reduce the amount of pride that you have
in the code.
Because sometimes it's like, oh, it's my babies. I think I'm the best one that can do it. It should be done one way or another. It's like, no, it's good that you want to do your work in with a high quality level and so on and so forth, but you have to reduce your pride. And the other one is that you need to understand that it's not your code in this individual sense, but it's your code in the plural sense. It's your as a team. And you don't own the code. You're owning that development at that one point. You're responsible for the growth of that product at that point, but it's not yours.
Yeah, I think that sometimes the feeling is also like trusting, right? It's not so easy, like, to just, you know, trust somebody that they will deliver on high quality, on a tight deadline. I mean, if you've seen them do it in the past, sure, but in the beginning, it's not so easy. Somebody comes into your team and you just delegate this important task. It's like, okay, I'm going to pray for you. Or I'm just light up some candles.
And pray for you. No, but it's also important that you know your team's strengths and weaknesses and how fast they are. Sometimes, for example, depending on the things that I've been in situations in which, oh, this is a JavaScript heavy task. Well, I knew who of my team was good at JavaScript. I would say, hey, you know, I think this task should go to this person. This was a CSS heavy task. It's like, well, you know, maybe this other person should do it. And you have to understand the strengths, the weaknesses, the ability that your team has. You have to get to know them, and you should never give more work than they can. They can do, because otherwise it's just going to lead to frustration, because they're going to feel that they're not good enough. So this is important as well. You have to know the people that you work with as much as you have to know yourself. I don't know. Have you ever been in a situation in which you've given a task, delegated someone a task that you didn't want to delegate, but just because you felt obligated to do it, and then was disappointed?
Well, not obligated, but I knew that it was good for them to grow in that, maybe, I don't know, call it animations, performance, I don't know, something that I know these people can grow on. I would like to do it because I enjoy it very much, but I say, no, hold on, let them do it. They haven't done it in the past, maybe, let them do it. I don't know if they disappointed me. I don't remember any particular moment. Usually here at Content Center, everybody is very like... self leader, where, you know, they will raise a hand if they are stuck or whatever. But yes, and that is hard. Sometimes I want to do implementations and I just hand them off. It's a curse, the curse of the lead.
And what I do in this case, when I do this, and I think it might be a little bit hard, I do once again the over the fence approach. Like, how are you doing with this task? Is it everything okay? Do you need any help? You know, this is, it's, even if you delegate, that doesn't mean that you cannot peek at what they're doing.
No, you can, because otherwise the PR is going to be, the pull request is going to be, oh my goodness. You don't want to be at the very end of the implementation with 3 hours left for the deadline and seeing a pull request that needs 300 changes.
I've been there. Oh. We once had this situation which we wanted to foster this person's knowledge. We gave them like a task that we thought they could handle, and they were constantly, and we gave them, I say we, because at that point I was in a team that there were more than one lead, which can happen, and it's okay. You know, you don't have to be the one front-end lead, although you can traditionally be one front-end lead in order to communicate with a client or with a specific, a team can have more than one front-end lead. And usually it's when you have several people that have natural leadership skills, and people see them as natural leaders, and they're not going to choose one over the other. Anyhow, I was back in a team that we had several leads, And it was like, okay, let's give this person, let's give them this task. They should, they've done it in the past. They should be able to do it. And during the standups, how are you doing? Oh, I'm doing fine. Okay. How are you doing? I'm doing fine. And then one day before the delivery was, how are you doing? Oh, I have nothing. It's like, what?
Oh, wow. But that, but he was lying to your face. They were lying to your face.
They were, yeah, they were lying to our face or to themselves or to whatever. And in the end, one of the team members, more senior team members, said, okay, no worries. Let me take a look at that. They did it in a couple of hours. Well, a couple, I don't know, 2-4 hours. Mm. They had it done, but it's like, okay, but and they started working on that and they finished. But it was a little bit disappointing. And that's when I realized that you do have to take more than their words sometimes, depending on how much you know that person. And you have to say, okay, how are you doing? I'm doing good. But after a couple of times, it's like, okay, let me see what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Show me. Preview me the pull request or something.
Exactly. Yeah. Something like that. Sometimes you do need to step in, even if you're laissez-faire, even if you let people give a lot of liberty. Sometimes you have to meddle. Sometimes you have to poke inside. It happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Last topic I have here. Let's talk about feedback. Not a long line. Why feedback? But how do you deliver feedback as a front-end lead? Like in what scenarios? What do you try to, or how do you do it? Basically, right? I mean, is it unsolicited feedback? Is it when they ask you for it?
Always.
Always. Well, what's your approach?
I call them in Slack. I just do a message, a video message at the Hi. Middle of a task. Hi. Yeah, I want to know. I think that there's feedback is very important. I think that you receiving feedback and giving feedback is very important. One case would be that when you see that something was well done, you go and tell them, hey, I think that you did a very good job on this task. It's like, congratulations. After you, for example, review a pull request, I've seen people in my current team that they've done it. Even to me, they say, hey, you did a very nice job. It's like, okay, that's super nice that they do this. And this is something that I try to do when I see that they've done a very good job. To tell them, just let them know. You don't need to go to specifics, but letting them know that they're doing a good job is important.
Yeah, I even did it like sometimes I you can do multiple levels of this. You can go just Slack message one emoji. You can just say it in a Slack message on a daily. Maybe if it's a bigger round, just to give props in a bigger round, yes. That's also good. But also I've gone into the pull request and, you know, maybe a one line like saying, oh, wow, this line is very good. Like, I love this, the way you solve this, whatever, this approach, this sort of loop, higher the function, whatever it is, and say, hey, I love this line. That's it. No action, no task, just I love it. Yeah, it's good. I think you have to reinforce some of the behavior they're doing, but also correct it sometimes, which is not so easy.
Yeah. But once again, you don't have to, you have to reduce your pride and never take, that's also everyone needs to do, not take things personally. But I love this. I never, the saying, it's, well, not never. I rarely do this, like saying, hey, this is a very nice implementation.
Yeah, why not?
But I think... It's a good practice, and if people are doing a good job, you should let them know that they're doing a good job. And I love the approach of, and this has happened to me. I've been in situations where they say, "Oh, Chucho, you did a fantastic job here," and I say, "That wasn't me. That was this other person that was working on that."
Don't take other people's work for you. Yeah, definitely.
No. Yeah, because I was responsible in the sense of that thing being done, in the sense that I had to overlook that. But that doesn't mean that I was the one that did the job. And when they tell you, it's like, oh, very good job. It's like, you have to say, be honest about this and give the congratulations. Like, okay, it's not me. It was this person. Or even when you're giving an update regarding something, it's like, oh yeah, we managed to do this. And this person, they managed to push forward and did a fantastic job. I think when they do it to me, I feel a lot of pride. I feel very happy that they're taking the moment to say, hey, you did a good job in front of everyone. So I try to do that. Oh, I think I don't hear you. You're muted yourself.
Sorry about that. Yes. Apologies.
Without words.
last section before we close off, before we go into the question of the week for the listeners, it's about tips, tricks, or something you would like to encourage people to do. I'll start because I was listening to this podcast from, Lex Fridman with Jeff Bezos, and he was giving a great tip that I'm trying to implement. Jeff Bezos was saying that on Amazon, he was trying when he was there, where now at Blue Origin, if he's the most senior person in the meeting, be it an alignment, whatever it is, speak last. Because usually you as a lead, you might have questions. Maybe, okay, how is implementation going? How is this in there? Are we meeting the deadline? Things like that. But he was thinking, no, let me speak last, because usually if I speak last, all these questions are usually answered. And I don't have to micromanage or tell them, hey, how are you doing? Hey, how is status? Rather, sit back, listen, and at the end, ask questions. So very interesting approach. And I'm trying to do that on my dailies and things like that. Speak last. And if I have questions, good. If they're answered, even better. Any tips from your side?
Yes. One thing that I've learned that is important to help any team is to foster the proper environment, basically. And when you're in a lead position, you're in a position to actually try to foster this. This includes making people feel safe speaking up. You know, give them the confidence that they need to say, hey, I think, and I had people ask me, hey, this might be a stupid question. It's like, no, don't worry, there's no stupid questions. And even if it's not the best, the brightest question, the important thing is that unless you're asking me if the churros should have chocolate or strawberries, which isn't stupid, but just not to the point of what we're talking about, there's not really stupid questions and people should feel safe and asking them. People should be safe on speaking up. People should be happy or no, should know that they can be, that they're part of the team and participate, you know. You have to foster this. You have to foster this environment. Sometimes in places it's very hard, but that would be my biggest recommendation. As a lead, you need to foster a nice environment where people feel empowered and feel confident enough to participate in that.
Excellent. Then we close off with a question for you. What is your ideal leadership style or leadership type, either you as a lead or if somebody's leading you, how would you like them to be? How do you want to be? Let us know in the comments, either YouTube or, you know, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, we're everywhere. So thank you so much for listening to this Front End Coffee Break.
Thank you very much.